Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. Today on the show, the first show of the Timberwolves offseason, taking a look at the series against the Grizzlies in Game 6 specifically. What can the playoff experience tell us about which direction the Wolves should take the offseason? What are the biggest questions that need to be answered this summer? It'll be a really kind of a 10,000-foot view as we kick off the offseason. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's show is brought to us by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered throughout the season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Happy Monday, everybody. This is the first full podcast episode of the offseason. The Timberwolves, of course, losing Friday night. The season's over. There's a ton to cover. We're going to get to all that here in a second. First, a big thank you to those of you that do make Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere. That includes YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms, whether it's Apple or Google, Spotify, perhaps it's Odyssey. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find this show. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T Wolves and also at B Beacon. And that's with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, so roadmap to this show. I want to do a little bit of Game 6 kind of autopsy in a way. This is basically 48 hours of reflection, roughly, since the game ended, you know, when I'm recording this late on Sunday. And, I did the immediate live postcast with Chalanga. We did those, the last few weeks, really throughout the month of April. And Chalanga from Zone Coverage and the CND NBA show, and gave some immediate reaction to the loss. Some of those points still stand, but after reflecting a little bit on it, I want to give kind of a, I don't want to rehash the whole thing, but I think the perspective of that loss in Game 6 and also the series as a whole being competitive, but obviously falling well short of, falling shorter than they would have even liked to have fallen short, if that makes sense. They couldn't even force the Game 7, I guess is what I'm trying to say. What does that tell us about the potential direction of the offseason? And then a really broad offseason, like 5 minutes on, hey, what does this look like for, in terms of the roster? We've got plenty of time to really get in the weeds on individual player reviews, which I do plan to do very shortly here. I want to go through potential trades, potential free agent targets. What could the Wolves do with the mid-level exception? Which players are tradable? What does the draft look like? The Wolves, of course, have a first rounder and 3 second-round picks in this year's draft. There's plenty of time to do all of that. There's still 6 weeks, seven, 8 weeks left in 6 or 7 weeks left in the playoffs before the draft. So there's plenty of time for all that. So I want to do kind of the 10,000 foot view today. And I want to start with Game 6, the burning questions, question marks, I guess, because the burning question marks really headed into the summer that Game 6 and the series as a whole kind of brought up. I think the first thing, and we spent some time on this on the postcast, Chalanga and I did on Friday night, it has to be D'Angelo Russell. And I don't want to turn this into more than it is necessarily, but I think it would be really ignorant to not recognize that that is the talking point, or the topic of conversation, maybe more accurately, coming out of Friday's Game 6 loss. Because D'Angelo Russell, the elephant in the room here is D'Angelo Russell was benched on the stretch. That didn't happen, I don't think, at all ever this year or the previous year under Ryan Saunders or Chris Finch last season. And of course, Ryan Saunders and D'Lo, it's well documented, they did not necessarily see eye to eye on offensive strategy and weren't the best of buds when Saunders was coaching the Timberwolves. And Finch and D'Lo, by all accounts, got along great. But remember, let's do it this way. So D'Lo just didn't have a good series, right? We don't need to go through all the numbers. I'm not going to go through the per game numbers in the series. We all know that D'Lo played great against Memphis in the regular season. His best matchup in terms of what he was able to do scoring wise. And in the postseason, Memphis keyed in on him. He only had really one good all around game against Memphis, flashes in other games, but was not good. In the pivotal Game 6, the elimination game, D'Lo had just 7 points on 7 shots. He had 4 assists and 4 turnovers in that game. He had 3 early steals. And actually, if you want to go by single game plus minus, which I'm sure all the big D'Lo fans out there would like to, he had the team's best plus minus. He was a +4 in this game, actually. Well, he was so bad during that stretch in the fourth quarter that he played only 2 or 3 minutes before Chris Finch pulled him in favor of Jordan McLaughlin to play alongside Patrick Beverley. And Pat Bev didn't have a great game either. He fouled out. He did play 38 minutes, but he didn't have a great game. I mean, really, nobody on the Timberwolves did have a great game. Ant was probably the Wolves' best player, but besides Jaden McDaniels, of course. In general, it was just a disappointing game all the way around. But D'Angelo Russell, as a member of what is supposed to be the Timberwolves' big three, just had a really poor playoff performance. And there's some bigger questions to be asked about how does he fit into Chris Finch's offense? He was being asked to do a lot of different things this year than he did last year under Ryan Saunders, and he was much better this year than he was the previous season under Ryan Saunders. And I've said many times before anybody who is a D'Lo stan gets upset about this mini soapbox that I'm on, I think this is the best year of D'Lo's career. I think all the way around, he was much better defensively than he's ever been in his NBA career. And he was, even though it was a little bit of a down shooting year, he was generally more efficient. He got to the line a little bit more. He passed the ball well when he was asked to do so. I thought he was really good, arguably better than he was in his All-Star season with the Brooklyn Nets. He had a case to make the All-Star team mid-season. I mean, he missed a few too many games in the first half. I'm not saying he should have been, but he was at least in the fringes of the conversation of somebody that could have had a shot at an All-Star berth. He had a good regular season. But what does this mean moving forward? I mean, you look at the Timberwolves. We're going to talk more about the cap later and the roster and where that all stands. But D'Lo has only 1 year left on his deal. He is extension eligible now. He's no doubt, of course, going to be looking for a maximum contract extension. Of course, the contract he's on now was the max that he signed in the sign-and-trade. He signed with Brooklyn, was traded to Golden State the summer in which the Timberwolves also pursued him. And then, of course, he was traded to the Wolves from Golden State just a few months after that. But D'Lo has a little over $31 million on the books this year before he becomes an unrestricted free agent. I'm sure his agent is inquiring about the extension. No question about that. But where do the Wolves stand? Is he tradable for at a $31 million contract? Now, he's an expiring deal, so possibly. But what team has enough that they're going to send back, right? Because most other players on a max contract to match salaries are probably better than D'Lo. And a potential trade partner would not want to make that swap. Otherwise, you're talking about piecing together a trade with multiple pieces to try and add up to enough salary to make that trade happen in terms of the cap rules, right? And the Wolves don't have the roster spots or probably the appetite to add a bunch of these contracts that are going to add up to that same amount. Why not just run it back at that point? So I think in terms of the offseason, it's pretty clear D'Lo's not very unlikely to go anywhere this season. I think D'Lo is, or this offseason, I should say, I think he's on the roster throughout next year. Or at least into next season. I don't think the Wolves would get requisite value and be able to match salaries to trade him. But I also don't think there's really any chance he gets a contract extension yet. I think it would be a big mistake to hand him a maximum contract extension at this point. But later, I want to get a little bit more in the weeds on his match to the Wolves offense and what Chris Finch wants to do. I think there's a lot to be said for how much better D'Angelo Russell was defensively this year. He was really kind of an average point guard defender this year. He used his size to his advantage. He used his intelligence to his advantage. He tried hard defensively, which is a vast improvement from what he was defensively in the past. However, he struggled in the playoffs, both defensively and offensively. The shot wasn't falling as much as it should have throughout the season. The outside shot wasn't where it was the prior year. And he's a little bit of a high usage guy to put between Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns. He played that role well enough this year, obviously well enough for the Wolves to win. Well, they win 46 games and go to the playoffs. And in another year, they may have been higher than a 7 seed. Is that the optimal match moving forward for Ant, who should be on this team for another 6, 7 plus years, and Karl Anthony Towns, who's for sure on the team for another couple of years and likely much longer? He's going to be supermax eligible this offseason. We'll talk more about that in the future as well. All these are questions that need to be answered. And D'Angelo Russell's performance in Game 6 made him the story. And to his credit, in the exit interviews, by all accounts, he was very like, hey, I don't want to make this a thing. Obviously, I was disappointed. I wasn't playing in crunch time of this elimination game, but he also doesn't want to make it the focus. And I don't think that specifically has to be, but it just shows, it shows some guts really by Chris Finch to do that, to bench one of his two max contract players down the stretch of an elimination game, which was the right call, in my opinion. And also that D'Lo does still want to be a team player. We know he's good friends with Karl-Anthony Towns. We know the team was really close this year. And so D'Lo's handled it correctly, too. I don't think there's any issues with D'Lo moving forward being on this team. And that's good because I think he will be in the fall. To be very clear, I think he will be on the roster in the fall. I just don't know, you know, what happens next year. It's pretty unlikely he gets traded during the season. Does this just become a max contract player who expires at the end of next year? The rare guy who's going to be a starter, right? They're not going to like phase him out. It's not going to be like a, I know this wasn't a max contract, but like, like a Chandler Parsons massive contract, like ask him to go away. He doesn't show up or whatever. Like D'Lo's going to play. He's going to be a starter, but they're not going to extend him. I don't think they're going to be able to trade him. So I think he's just going to kind of play the year out and we'll see where it goes. And maybe he has a huge year in his contract year and the extension does happen at some point late in the season. That's entirely possible. But I think it's going to be a little bit of a weird lame duck year. And hopefully the Wolves get the best version of D'Lo and he's extra motivated to perform extremely well. Not that he wasn't this year, but there could be, you know, something good in store there if that's actually the case. All right, there's a couple more things I want to take from the Grizzlies series. And then I want to do like a real quick overall roster situation, like who's going to be a free agent this offseason, you know, who's under contract, that sort of a thing. So we're going to do all that here next. First of all, let's talk about betonline.net. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's NBA playoffs and the start of the MLB season. We're about a month into MLB now. By the way, the lines for the Wolves series were pretty good. I think the only game that the favorite lost was game one. No, I guess the other Wolves win. They were also maybe 1.5-point underdogs in that home game, 2-point underdogs. But in general, BetOnline pretty much nailed those lines in the Wolves-Grizzlies series. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. A big thank you once again for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Make sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. It's draft season now officially if you're a Wolves fan. And I mean, hey, we're not talking lottery, but we're talking first-round pick, 3 second rounders. Make sure to check out the Locked On NBA Big Board show. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, big boards. It's free and available wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, a couple of other things from Wolves Grizzlies. Number one, and these are not like super novel ideas, right? But I think they bear repeating if we've talked about them before on this show. But the other thing that this series really showed that the Wolves need moving forward is more flexibility in terms of versatile and switchable defenders. We said that going into last season, and they did improve in that regard. They acquired Patrick Beverley. They played Jaden McDaniels more. They played Jared Vanderbilt a lot more. All those guys are far more long, flexible, switchable, versatile defenders compared to what the Wolves tried out there in 2019, 2020, and even into 2020, 2021. This is a much improved roster in terms of versatile defenders than it used to be. In fact, so much so that Josh Okogie fell out of the rotation because he was limited enough offensively. And even though he was arguably one of the top two on-ball defenders in terms of guards and wings on the team. Taurean Prince is another example. This team has far more of them than they used to. However, D'Angelo Russell, even if he's improved as an on-ball defender, he's not entirely switchable. Jordan McLaughlin is a very good defender, but he's limited in terms of his guarding ability. Karl-Anthony Towns was much more effective in a high-wall defensive scheme than he ever was in a drop coverage scheme, but he's not super switchable. When you're talking about centers, he is fairly switchable compared to a lot of other guys, but it becomes tougher if teams are playing small ball, right? And that's one of the counters that teams had for the Wolves was playing smaller and making it really difficult for the Timberwolves to defend pick and roll game. But Vanderbilt, McDaniels, those are the best examples. Patrick Beverley, all very switchable. Taurean Prince is relatively switchable, but I think a little bit overrated in terms of his on-ball defense. And when switched on to smaller players, he struggled in terms of lateral quickness. Jalen Noel ended up in the rotation a lot. I love Jalen Noel. Not a very switchable defender, very limited defensively. And that's ultimately why he lost a rotation spot, was because of his limits defensively. Naz Reid really struggles in terms of defending on the perimeter, any sort of pick and roll. If he's not in the paint, he's not an effective defender. And that was one of the bigger issues prior to this year, whenever he ended up starting, if Karl-Anthony Towns was out the past couple of seasons when Kat had some injury issues, not this year, but Nas was often exposed defensively because he's not as nimble as he can be with the ball on the low block and as good as he can be as a role man in the Timberwolves offense. He's pretty limited defensively. The lateral quickness is not there like the footwork is necessarily. The quickness is on the offensive side of the floor. Defensively, the lateral quickness and also there's some awareness issues there. Nas is not great in that regard. And obviously with the Wolves tried the Hail Mary, you know, Nas wasn't available, I guess, in game six, but the Hail Mary of Greg Monroe, also not, there's a reason he hadn't been in the league, right? He's not exactly super switchable and not your most nimble pick and roll defender. So the Wolves need to get more versatile in terms of their wing defenders, especially, but also their bigs, their concepts overall. They can't always play high wall. They've got to be able to switch more often. You look at the Torontos of the world. I mean, Memphis is another example of a team that has a lot of switchable players, but Toronto is maybe the best example of a team that just has a ton of long athletes. Their front office has done. And there's a lot of teams that are that way now in today's NBA. The Wolves need to continue to improve in that regard. Not sure what the future holds for like Leandro Balmaro, for instance, but he's another one who should be a very switchable, versatile defender to add to the rotation. So that's an area the Wolves need to improve. And then also something that Patrick Beverley talked a lot about after game six and in his exit interview was experience. And I think while this Wolves team is one of the league's youngest teams, they've also got some guys with playoff experience from D'Lo to Torian Prince to Patrick Beverley. I guess D'Lo's isn't exactly extensive, but neither is Karl-Anthony Towns. But Beverley, I guess, and Torian Prince would be the most obvious ones. Greg Monroe to a lesser extent as more of a bench guy. But this team still was relatively inexperienced. I think, and I'm not suggesting the Wolves go out and acquire a bunch of, you know, older players to add that experience to the locker room, because that's not going to happen. That's not the ticket to winning more. I think literally just this experience is going to be so beneficial for all these players. And obviously it's been well documented. Everybody knows Anthony Edwards is 20 years old. It's crazy. I mean, you go back and look at like, say, Kobe Bryant, his first couple of years in the playoffs, he didn't know what he was doing. And actually for the most part, looked like he knew what he was doing other than the doomed steal attempt at the end of game five and some other moments, of course. But in general, Ant was very impressive in this series. And across the board, Karl-Anthony Towns had a very up and down series, mostly down, frankly. And this is a good experience for him too. It's a different vibe around this team than the Jimmy Butler team that lost in five games to the Rockets as the eight seed several years ago, well, 4 years ago. It's a different vibe. This team had higher expectations, generally is younger. There's, you know, no Butler, no Taj Gibson, no Jamal Crawford. This is a younger roster that expected to do more, that lost to a similarly young team that just had that experience last year. Memphis lost in five. They won the play-in. They won the big game one last season. And then they lost four in a row and lost the series. The Wolves did one game better than that and were more competitive than Memphis was in games 2 through 5 last year. The Wolves were this year in games 2 through 6. No, 3 through 6. Game two is kind of a not competitive for the Wolves. But there's positives to take from this. And even if it's not adding experience to the locker room, it's this locker room now has that experience. So yes, it'd be great to get another veteran player or two. There's some that are going to be free agents. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. So the Wolves perhaps do replace them with guys that have experience as well. But you know, you're not magically going to have like most of your rotation with tons of playoff experience when your best players are Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, and D'Angelo Russell, all of whom, you know, had played a great, you know, Russell and Towns had each played in one playoff series before the season. Edwards obviously hadn't played in any. So you're not going to magically have so much more experience. Also, Jared Vanderbilt, I mean, like Jaden McDaniels, these guys are your core players. Those are five of your top seven rotation guys. You're not magically going to have a bunch more playoff experience unless you're making major moves, which I don't think are in the cards for this offseason. All right. Next, I want to talk about just real quickly an overview of the roster. Who's hitting the free agent market? Who could hit the free agent market? Which are the most tradable players? And then we'll spend the rest of the offseason really kind of digging in. We'll spend some individual shows digging in more on each of those issues and each player individually. So that's what we'll do here next. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Built Bar. Summer is coming. We're almost there. With summer, you're going to need some food on the go. Built Bars are the perfect snack to take with you on your family vacations. Throw them in your bags and your kids' backpacks. Make sure that everyone has a bar so you're fueled for your summer adventures. The best part about Built Bars, they're healthy and delicious. No more sacrificing delicious food for health. With Built Bar, you can have both, and it is easy. All you have to do is go to Built.com and order now. All Built Bars and Puffs are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means that with Built Bar, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. Built Bar makes sure that there's something for everyone. There's tons of delicious flavors. Most Built Bars contain just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar and 4 net carbs, but they also have 17 grams of protein. Compare that to your average candy bar, which typically has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. Go to Built.com to get all your favorites. Banana cream pie, raspberry, double chocolate, and so many more. They're all delicious, and new flavors are coming out all the time. Check them out at Built.com. Again, Built.com. Use our promo code, LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, let's close this thing out by talking about the roster. So I said the same thing last offseason. There just isn't a ton of roster flexibility here with the Wolves. There's maybe even less question marks this offseason than last offseason. There's less restricted free agents. Remember last offseason, it was what do you do with Jordan McLaughlin? What do you do with Jared Vanderbilt? What do you do with Juancho Hernan Gomez, who was the option is picked up. He was ultimately traded. I'm sorry, the option's actually for next year, but he was ultimately traded. Two off seasons ago, Juancho and Malik Beasley were both restricted free agents. So this year, the only restricted free agent that wasn't a two-way player is Josh Okogie. So the Wolves need to figure out what to do with him. Very likely they allow him to become an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, he's going to find a team. He's going to be on an NBA roster. He's a good enough defender to do that. There's still probably some upside offensively if he can figure out how to shoot a jumper at all. Now we're 4 years in and he hasn't really, but there's value to having Josh Okogie on your team. By all accounts, he's a fantastic teammate and a lockdown defender. So he'll find a job. I just think it's unlikely that it's with Minnesota. Obviously, both Nathan Knight and McKinley Wright, two-way players. They're both restricted free agents. Remember, 2 years ago, Jordan McLaughlin signed a second two-way deal with the Wolves. Then last year, off of his second two-way contract, he was still a restricted free agent. It dragged on into training camp, and he ultimately came back to Minnesota. Weird that he didn't have more of a market. Now, both Knight and Wright are going to hit the restricted free agent market. The Wolves have the ability to tender them qualifying offers. They could always come back on a second two-way. No idea. That's not going to be a priority for the offseason. The only unrestricted free agents... Nate Knight is obviously... I shouldn't say obviously. I think he's a rotation big in the NBA. He's probably like a fourth big on a good team, a fringe rotation guy, but there's certainly upside there. I'd love to have him back in Minnesota. It's early because very likely it would be as a, you know, minimum type contract, maybe even another two-way. But there also could be another team that feels more strongly about Nate Knight. Maybe a team that's looking for some front court depth that isn't a playoff team yet that has more minutes for him. But I do think he's an NBA caliber kind of fringe rotation guy at this stage. Only unrestricted free agents for Minnesota are Jake Layman. Jake Layman and Torian Prince are the only two. Jake Layman, of course, signed that deal after the sign and trade a couple of years ago. He was $3.9 million coming off the books this year, and he'll be allowed to hit the market, certainly. And then Torian Prince made a little over $15 million this year, which, looking back at that contract, crazy. He was good in stretches. He obviously had a terrible October, November, December, but came on strong in January. It was really good in January, February, and into March. Was kind of fringe rotation guy towards the end of the season and into the playoffs. Didn't play in a couple of the playoff games, including the final one. And so it's always possible he comes back on a smaller deal, depending on how the offseason shakes out. By all accounts, he was a great teammate and was a good veteran presence in the locker room. He's the type of player that makes sense for the Wolves in terms of a ninth, 10th guy in the rotation who can play multiple positions, can knock down open threes. So it's possible he comes back. Certainly, whoever is in that role isn't going to make as much money as Prince did this year. The Wolves don't have that many tradable assets. We already talked about why D'Lo is probably not tradable this offseason. There's no sense. Both Naz Reid and Jalen Noel have team options at $1.9 million for next year. They're not going anywhere. Those are bargains. Even if, no matter how you feel about Naz Reid, and he certainly had his challenges this year, he's better than a $1.9 million guy. Same with Jalen Noel. Both of those guys will be back on those deals. And they're, again, like we talked about at the trade deadline, they're not big enough deals to really be tradable either. I mean, if you did trade them, you wouldn't get enough value back because most teams would jump at the chance to have one or both of those guys at that price, which are both great contracts signed by Gerson Rosas several years ago. So those two guys are likely going to be back. I mean, there's not a, you're obviously not going to trade Jaden McDaniels at this point. He showed far too much value for where his contract is as a late first round pick. You're obviously not trading Ant, D'Lo, Cat. So that leaves Malik Beasley, who's got 1 year and then a club option for the following season on his deal. There could be a team that's interested in him. He doesn't have a major role in Minnesota with Anthony Edwards blossoming the way he has, with Jaden McDaniels blossoming the way he has, obviously with D'Lo and Cat still on the team. It's very possible he's traded. In terms of guys with value, Leandro Balmaro would be another one. Now, if the Wolves are, if Okogie's gone, if Prince is gone, if Lehman's gone, if Beasley ends up getting traded, Balmaro could very well end up with a rotation, or at least be able to fight for a rotation role this year. So I don't know that Balmaro's for sure going to be traded, but he certainly would have some trade value as a recent first-round pick and a young player. So it's always possible he's traded. Those would be the two guys that I would flag as have some trade value, and I could see the Wolves trading. And obviously, they've got all their future picks and some extra second-rounders in the coming seasons. So it's possible that some of those guys are packaged with future picks to bring back another rotation player. So obviously, very early, but just as a really quick preview of the offseason, there's not a ton of roster flexibility. The mid-level exception will probably be used at some point. It hasn't been much of late for the Wolves because of their cap situation. But we'll dive more into that as well. Should be still be very interesting. Obviously, there's the first round pick, the 3 second rounders. What do the Wolves do with those? Do they try and trade a second rounder or two for a future second rounder or two? Do they try and kick that can down the road? Because Noel and Reed are basically second round picks, right? In terms of their contract value, and we already know that they're better than insert random rookie second rounder here. So, you know, drafting 3 second rounders doesn't do you a lot of good this year. I'm sure they try and trade one, maybe try and stash one and maybe draft one. Or maybe they package a couple to move up in the second round or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen. We'll break all that down here in the coming weeks. The rest of this week, we're going to start to dive into the player reviews for the season. And then anything else that comes out in terms of exit interviews and some of that stuff that's now wrapping up for the Wolves. And we'll keep tabs, of course, on the NBA playoffs as well. All right. Thanks for listening to the show. Thank you for sticking with us here through the playoffs and into the offseason. We're still daily right now, Monday through Friday for the next several weeks. And pretty soon we're going to flip almost entirely to draft mode. Right now it's kind of season review, overview of the offseason, and then it becomes draft mode. So we'll be sure to stay on top of draft rumblings related to the Wolves. We'll do some mock draft stuff here with other Lockdown hosts. We'll have some more guests on the show as we get into the offseason. So thanks again to those of you that do make Lockdown Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, the show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as Apple, Google, Spotify, and Odyssey. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at BBeacon with 2 B's, 2 E's, C-K-E-N. Remember, the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Network. And of course, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. Thanks again for making us your first listen. You can make your second listen Locked On NBA. From the first jump ball, the play-in tournament, to the last possession of the finals, Locked On experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.